Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are shortcutting you past the noise and diving deep into why these so-called soft skills. Well, they've become the absolute hardest, most critical skills for modern leadership.
That's right. It's a fascinating shift.
And we have to start with a statistic that honestly just doesn't make intuitive sense at first glance. Our sources reveal this persistent and surprising finding. People with average cognitive intelligence, average IQ, actually outperform those with the highest IQs, something like 70% of the time throughout their careers.
It's the IQ paradox, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's pretty much the definitive reason we're having this conversation today. For generations, we really leaned on IQ as the main predictor of success at work.
Seemed logical enough.
It did. But the research shows IQ only accounts for about maybe 25% of career performance.
Just a quarter.
Roughly.
Yeah.
Which leaves the other 75%, the real competitive edge. That's emotional intelligence, or EQ. It's the critical differentiator, the missing piece.
Okay, so let's be really clear on what we mean by that. We're defining emotional intelligence, EI, EQ, same thing, basically, as the capacity to first recognize and understand your own feelings, and then manage and influence them and do the same for the emotions of other people. It's knowing what you're feeling, keeping it in check, and I guess knowing how to share it productively.
Absolutely. You nailed it. EQ is that missing link in the whole performance equation. So our mission for this deep dive is to really synthesize what your sources are telling us.
Right.
To reveal exactly why mastering this thing called emotion regulation isn't just, you know, a nice to have for feeling good. It's actually essential for organizational success, especially in the kind of unpredictable world we're living in now.
Okay, let's lay the groundwork then. Emotion regulation, or ER. This isn't just about, like, stuffing your feelings down.
No, definitely not suppression in the old sense.
The sources define ER as this dynamic kind of ongoing process. Recognizing emotions, exerting some control over how intense they feel and how you react to them, especially the tricky negative ones.
Exactly. It's what helps you maintain that equilibrium, that balance you need to function well, socially and professionally.
So it's a core skill within that bigger EI picture.
Precisely.
Mm.
And ER is really the core self-skill within the broader structure of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
If we look at the model from the Center for Creative Leadership, high EI has four key parts, sort of building outward from yourself.
Okay.
First, you absolutely must have self-awareness. That's knowing your own emotions, knowing your strengths, your weaknesses, and crucially, understanding how they actually impact your work and the people around you.
Which, if you genuinely know yourself, I mean, really know yourself, that should lead straight to the second part, right? Self-management.
Ideally, yes. This is the practical application. It's the ability to control those negative impulses, manage stress effectively, and stay flexible, stay adaptive when things inevitably change or go wrong.
But self-management sounds great in theory. We all want that. But when you're under fire, maybe facing a tight deadline or some tough criticism, how do the sources suggest we actually do that instead of just, you know, reacting?
Ah, that's the tension, isn't it? Self-management requires deliberately interrupting that automatic knee-jerk response. It's about creating a pause.
The pause, okay.
Yeah, just a moment. The sources stress that people with high EQ use that pause to mentally reframe the situation. They don't let the emotion just dictate their behavior. So if they feel, say, intense frustration bubbling up, they try to apply curiosity instead of just lashing out. They ask why before they react.
Okay, so that's the internal work, self-awareness, self-management.
Right, and once you start to get a handle on yourself, we move outward into the social sphere. The third component is social awareness.
Empathy.
True deep empathy, yes. Mm. Understanding the needs, the perspectives of others, and also navigating the sometimes tricky social dynamics of your team or organization proactively.
Right.
Reading the room, essentially.
Got it. And then finally, if you integrate those first three.
To get to relationship management. This is where it all comes together externally. It's the ability to inspire people, to motivate, communicate persuasively, build strong bonds, and maybe most critically for leaders, disarm and resolve conflict before it poisons everything.
And when those four components are weak, well, the consequences of low EQ sound pretty devastating, personally and professionally.
They really are. We looked into the data, and people lacking this emotional competence, they get stressed far more easily. They're actually twice as likely to struggle with anxiety, depression, substance abuse,
yeah,
things like that.
Wow. Twice as likely. That's a profound liability just for your own life, let alone leading others.
Absolutely.
Huh?
And professionally, it often shows up as what you might call leadership debt.
Mm.
Individuals with low EQ, they just handle negative emotions poorly. They might try to slap on a fake smile, you know, toxic
Sure.
positivity,
Yeah.
or they deflect blame onto others. They hold grudges that just corrode trust. And when their triggers get hit, they often default to impulsive or even aggressive behavior instead of engaging rationally.
So this really brings us to what you called the leader's dual challenge.
Yes. Being successful today means mastering two capacities at the same time.
Mm.
The ability to lead yourself effectively.
Right. The internal piece.
And the ability to manage your professional relationships well. And regulating your own emotions is absolutely central to succeeding at both.
You know, we often hear that old phrase, leave your emotions at the door, especially when talking about being professional. Are the sources basically saying that principle is, well, fundamentally broken now?
Pretty much, yes. The tension here is massive. Historically, leaders were often rewarded for being stoic, right? Appearing unflappable, never showing vulnerability.
The strong, silent type.
Exactly. But modern experts, people actually studying this in the field, they attest that this kind of suppression is actually counterproductive. Emotions are just fundamentally baked into human behavior.
Can't just switch them off.
You can't. Successful modern leaders can no longer just avoid them or pretend they don't exist. They actually need to actively model constructive engagement with feelings their own and their teams.
And if they fail to manage them, especially their own, the cost sounds staggering. We know people consistently struggle with regulating what the sources call the big three negative emotions: anxiety, sadness, and anger.
Those are the heavy hitters. And the fallout from failing to manage those three, especially in a leader, it's long and costly across the whole team. Poor ER in leadership can directly fuel burnout.
A huge issue right now.
Huge. It leads to deeply impaired decision making. It impoverishes overall performance, increases absenteeism, and maybe worst of all, it erodes that fundamental support and trust needed for psychological safety. People just don't feel safe.
Wow. That list, burnout, anxiety, loneliness, lack of trust. It reads like the diagnostic criteria for a toxic work culture. That's not just a morale problem. That sounds like a massive organizational liability.
It absolutely is. But look, there's a clear upside, a payoff for high EI. Mm. When a leader shows genuine emotional intelligence, real empathy, their employees feel valued, they feel supported.
Which leads to
greater team engagement, higher productivity. The data is quite clear on this. Managers who demonstrate more empathy towards their direct reports are actually viewed by their bosses as better overall performers.
Interesting. So it's noticed higher up, too.
Yes. Emotional competence directly affects the bottom line. It's not just fluffy stuff.
Okay, so let's pivot a bit and address the internal chaos that often leads to that external burnout. We've all experienced useful self-talk, right? That inner coach trying to guide us.
Hopefully.
But our sources point out that this internal monologue can easily morph into something far more disruptive. They call it chatter.
Ah, yes, chatter. It's like psychological quicksand. It's that negative thought spiral where we just worry incessantly. We ruminate over past mistakes. We catastrophize future outcomes.
Just spinning your wheels mentally.
Exactly. Leading researchers like Ethan Cross, who studies this, describe chatter as one of the great cognitive challenges we face because it makes it really hard to think clearly and perform optimally. It creates social friction, and it can severely damage both mental and physical health over time.
Okay, that sounds bad. But the good news is we don't have to be passive victims of this internal noise, right? Scientists have actually found a whole range of emotion regulation tools.
Yes, quite a few. Close to 30 evidence-based tools, in fact.
And they've logically broken them down into three kind of easy-to-understand buckets for you, the listener, the learner, to start experimenting with almost immediately.
That's probably the most actionable part of this whole deep dive, I think. These three buckets just organize the practical interventions based on where you find the tool. It makes it less overwhelming.
Okay, what are they?
So the first bucket contains tools you can use entirely on your own, internally. This includes techniques like distanced self-talk.
Distanced self-talk.
Yeah, it sounds a bit weird, but it's literally referring to yourself in the second or third person. Like asking, why is your name feeling so anxious about this presentation? Instead of, why am I so anxious?
Mm.
That little shift creates cognitive distance from the emotion.
Interesting. Okay, bucket one, on your own. What's two?
Bucket two leverages your relationships with other people.
Mm.
Now, this isn't venting. We'll get to why that's often unhelpful later.
Okay.
This is more about seeking constructive social support, or maybe getting perspective from someone whose judgment you genuinely trust. Sharing the load constructively.
And the third bucket?
The third uses tools you can find in the physical world around you. This can be as simple as changing your physical posture, standing tall, instead of slumping, for example.
Really? Posture.
Yeah, or using movement, like going for a walk, or even just shifting your physical environment, stepping outside for fresh air. These physical cues can actually signal to your brain that the immediate threat has passed, helping to interrupt that emotional loop.
Okay, so on your own, other people, physical world, let's dive into one of those specific adaptive strategies. A key evidence-based technique mentioned falling into that on your own bucket is cognitive reappraisal. Can you give us a quick example of how that works in a high-pressure moment?
Certainly. So imagine you had a really big disagreement in a meeting and it left you feeling furious, maybe thinking, I totally failed to stand my ground there.
Okay, happens to the best of us.
Right. Reappraisal means actively, consciously changing the story you tell yourself about that event. So instead of viewing the outcome purely as a personal failure, you might reframe it as, say, a learning opportunity about navigating tricky team dynamics. Or maybe view the conflict itself as a sign that you actually care deeply about the project rather than evidence of a personal flaw. That shift in perspective can completely change the resulting emotional impact.
So you're not changing the facts, but changing the meaning you assign to them.
Precisely. Another crucial strategy mentioned is mindfulness and acceptance. Now, this isn't passive surrender, like just giving up.
Right, it often gets misunderstood that way.
It does. It's more about active, non-judgmental observation of your thoughts and feelings as they arise.
So just noticing them without getting swept away.
Exactly. Practicing acceptance and mindfulness can really help calm the nervous system, help you regain emotional equilibrium, especially in moments of intense stress. It allows you to feel the emotion without necessarily letting it drive your immediate reaction. That's fundamental for building resilience and maintaining mental health.
Okay, that makes sense. But before we move on, we really need to clear up some widespread misconceptions about emotional health. The research highlights three pretty powerful myths we should probably discard. First, you should always live in the moment.
Yes.
Second, venting is useful. And third, avoidance is always harmful.
This is so critical. Let's tackle the venting myth first. We're often told, just get it off your chest.
Feels like it should work, right?
It feels like it should, but the research actually shows that venting often reinforces the negative emotional narrative rather than discharging it. Ruminating out loud over your anger or frustration, it just strengthens the neural pathways associated with that feeling. It keeps you stuck in that loop.
And probably annoys the person you're venting to.
Often, yes. Or it can lower their mood too. It's generally not constructive emotion regulation.
Okay, venting myth busted. What about avoidance? We generally think avoiding a problem means suppressing it, which we've established is typically bad. Right.
Well, it depends. Strategic avoidance can actually be highly adaptive.
Yeah.
Think about it. If you're completely exhausted, maybe on the verge of blowing up in a really toxic debate online, or even in a meeting, strategically withdrawing from that specific environment to regain your composure is good emotion regulation. It's avoiding the potential destruction, not denying the emotion itself exists. It's about choosing your battles and, importantly, choosing your timing.
Strategic avoidance. That
Definitely.
provides really critical context. Because we've established that managing emotions is crucial internally, but we also have to acknowledge the external world. It feels like it's never been more unstable.
That's certainly how it feels for many.
The sources specifically call out the extensive ongoing emotional fallout from all the recent external disruptions, the pandemic, geopolitical uncertainty, climate disasters, economic volatility. The list goes on.
It's incredibly hard to lead effectively when the world feels like it's constantly in upheaval. Traditional business analysis used the framework of VUCA, remember that? Volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous to describe challenges.
Yeah, VUCA was everywhere for a while.
It was. But the more recent, and maybe more psychologically accurate, framework describes the current world as BANI.
Badass. Okay, what's that stand for?
Brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible.
Brittle, anxious. Wow, that really captures the feeling, doesn't it? Especially anxious.
It does, and that anxiety piece is key.
Yeah.
High levels of emotional intelligence are absolutely essential for navigating these BANI environments. Why? Because emotionally intelligent individuals are inherently more self-aware.
Right, back to square one.
Exactly. And thus, they're better equipped to develop resilience. They tend to possess the psychological stability needed to deal with stressful situations more calmly and make more effective decisions, even under intense pressure.
And this is where that daily practice of mindfulness you mentioned really pays dividends, isn't it? It seems like it directly counteracts the anxious nature of Ben and I.
It really does. The research is quite clear on this. The practice of mindfulness directly benefits leaders. It helps regulate emotions and behaviors. It positively influences their well-being, their work performance, and all their interpersonal relationships.
And cognitive function, too.
Yes. It also improves cognitive function, which directly contributes back to those core EI competencies we talked about earlier, self-awareness, self-management. It reinforces the whole system.
Okay. And finally, let's look ahead a little. This is where the human element seems utterly irreplaceable, especially with all the rapid technological change like AI, advances in AI, you know, generative models, predictive analytics. They're fantastic for technical stuff, for operational efficiency.
Absolutely. Huge potential there. But the sources really emphasize that AI is still fundamentally limited in managing the emotions of employees within an organization or in people-related services generally.
So AI can't really detect, influence, or, you know, comfort human anxiety or build genuine trust?
Not in any meaningful human way, no.
Okay.
It can simulate empathy, perhaps, but it can't feel it or respond authentically to the nuances of human emotion.
Which just underscores that EI is fundamentally a human leadership domain. It really is the ultimate soft skill that cannot be outsourced to a machine.
Precisely.
So to wrap things up here, we've synthesized why emotional competence isn't just nice. It's the essential trainable skill for navigating your internal self, your professional relationships, and ultimately the success of your organization, especially in this anxious Bay and I world.
And here is the real aha moment, I think. The truly encouraging takeaway for you, the listener, the learner. Unlike IQ, which is generally pretty fixed after a certain age, emotional intelligence can be improved significantly over time.
It's a trainable skill.
It absolutely is. And this malleability, this ability to change, it isn't based on wishful thinking. It's grounded in neuroplasticity.
The brain's ability to rewire itself.
Exactly. The brain's fundamental ability to change based on experience. So when you repeatedly engage in new emotionally intelligent behaviors like practicing cognitive reappraisal or using that distant self-talk we mentioned,
you're building new pathways.
You are literally strengthening the neural pathways between your emotional brain and your rational brain. You're building new habits, default responses. Growing your EQ isn't just possible. It's entirely doable through consistent practice.
That's a powerful message. It's not fixed. You can get better at this.
You really can.
Okay, so we'll leave you with this final thought to consider. Given that the ability to effectively understand, manage, and navigate human emotion remains one of the few critical areas where artificial intelligence is still fundamentally limited, how much more essential does the cultivation of your personal emotional intelligence become for securing your long-term value and maybe your irreplaceable leadership position in the future of work?